Hey, what's up, YouTube? It's Richie from Boston. It's the 16th. It's April. It's 2026. All those things are debatable, but I'm not here to get into that right now. I want to show you, for those people that still believe Trump is somehow down for you, or that your entire political system is somehow down for you, even though they have openly, repeatedly, and clearly, they are Zionists, or they are simply working for Israel, period. These people aren't fooled. They know what they're doing. Trump sold out. Trump hasn't been blackmailed. Trump sold out, period. These people have already proven that they are pedophiles, and they do not care about you whatsoever at all. So hopefully this video helps. We'll see what happens. I got to at least try. So here we go.
Following is a letter from Rabbi Baruch Levy to Karl Marx, published in La Revue de Paris on page 574, dated June 1st, 1928. It's breathtaking in its arrogance and demonic prescience. I'll be back after this vile Jew supremacist diatribe.
The Jewish people as a whole will be its own messiah. It will attain world dominion by the dissolution of other races, by the abolition of frontiers, the annihilation of monarchy, and by the establishment of a world republic in which the Jews will everywhere exercise the privilege of citizenship. In this new world order, the children of Israel will furnish all the leaders without encountering opposition. The governments of the different peoples forming the world republic will fall without difficulty into the hands of the Jews. It will then be possible for the Jewish rulers to abolish private property and everywhere to make use of the resources of the state. Thus will the promise of the Talmud be fulfilled, in which is said that when the Messianic time has come, the Jews will have all the property of the whole world in their hands.
Ask yourself, what kind of people dream of oppressing all mankind to dominate and control everyone and everything? Jews actually believe this demonic supremacist crap. It's going to get them killed in a real final solution. Should we tell them what awaits them? That's our prophecy.
And Israel is stronger than ever. This is the bottom line of this campaign up until now. Let me say, there are still additional objectives for us to achieve, and we will achieve them either by agreement or by resumption of the fighting. We are ready to resume the fighting at any moment. Our finger is on the trigger. As you know, a 2-week ceasefire has been announced between the U.S. and Iran. No, we were not surprised in the last moment, and I want to emphasize, this is not the end of the war. This is a step in order to achieve all the objectives.
I'm a Jew. That means that I do not believe in the divinity of Jesus. I also believe, as an Orthodox Jew, that Judaism is not the only path to heaven. Judaism as a religion is not exclusive. Meaning that as long as people who are not Jewish follow seven basic Noahide laws, and this includes Christians and Muslims, they too have a share in the world to come. And those seven basic laws are things like no blasphemy, don't commit sexual sins, set up a court of law, make sure that you're not eating flesh from a living animal, stuff like that.
And vote early, vote absentee, vote on election day. I don't care how, but you have to get out and vote. And again, Christians, get out and vote just this time. You won't have to do it anymore. 4 more years, you know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. Get out. You got to get out and vote. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. Get out. You got to get out and vote.
You ask me to suck. You and your fucking Jesus could kiss my ass, okay?
Go away.
Screw you. Whoa. Don't camera. No camera. I break your camera. Don't take picture. Okay? Screw you, you Nazi. You fuck. Don't take camera. I break your camera. Don't take picture. Shabbat shalom. No picture. We don't want picture.
Leave. What? You need to. You can't come in here. This is not your house.
This is not your house.
We killed Jesus. We're proud of it. Where are you?
Did you record that?
Thank you.
This is not your land. It belongs to these families.
You son of a bitch. I'm going to kill you and the Palestinians. You Nazi, you son of a shit.
Hand for there.
This is my land. God gave it to me. Fuck you.
Hand for there.
Nazi. Call everyone you want. My house, this is my land. God gave it to me.
אתה רואה גויים כשווים, כבני אדם.
כן, בוודאי.
אוקיי, כל הזכויות שיש לך, כאילו, מגיע להם.
אני רואה את עצמי כמיוחד יותר, אבל ודאי שווה זכויות.
אוקיי, מה זה אומר מיוחד יותר? באיזה מובן? מישהו שלא מבין.
במובן הדתי.
אוקיי, שזה נותן לך מה.
אני חושב שיש לי ייעוד גדול יותר. הייעוד שלי הוא חשוב יותר.
אוקיי. Do you see Jews and non-Jews as the same?
Are you Jewish?
Yeah.
Are they Jewish?
No.
So what's the purpose of the question?
People outside want to know, from a Haredi point of view, do you see Jews and non-Jews as the same?
I'll answer you politically. In the eyes of
Hashem... I don't want political. Yeah, okay, fine, go.
In the eyes of Hashem, we all are created. In the eyes of God. We are all created, as the Chumash, the Bible says, the Jews are the chosen nation. So you can't exactly consider that when there's testimony from Hashem that we are different. So it's not my opinion, it's Hashem's opinion. I just happen to follow Hashem.
So as you can see so far, the Israelis pretending to be Jews hate us. They hate us, and all of our political people, the people that are in our government to serve our country, to serve Americans, to serve the taxpayers, have clearly and obviously turned their backs to such a degree that they're actually jumping on the Zionist Christian bandwagon, hoping that when the Mashiach comes back October 2nd, 2027, because that's their goal, these guys will be able to be on board.
All the anti-Semites, to all the isolationists, I don't believe. Forget it. I'm not with you. I'm with Israel. I will be with Israel to our dying day. They're the best ally we could hope for. So we have a commander-in-chief in President Trump, who I think is Ronald Reagan plus, plus, plus.
We have been abandoned at sea, and people need to understand that. And I'm not really seeing it, man. I'm just not. I've met so very many people in the last 8 months. It's insane. It's insane. And some people are squared away, some people understand what's going on, but some people are still looking towards the political system or to their worldly possessions. I mentioned that certain people I know that are awake on so very many levels are doing things that are actually helping build the beast system, data centers, technology, things of that nature. You can't justify helping to build the system that's going to enslave and kill most of us for money, because money is of this world. Honestly, it's amazing to me, and it's heartbreaking. And let's take a look at some of the people that are literally around Trump. Let's take a look at his spiritual advisor, Paula White, shall we?
They're coming here from Africa, from South America, angelic forces, angelic reinforcement. Fika hata anda ata orabata rata and eke eke manda rasata. For I hear the sound of victory. have even been dispatched from Africa right now. Africa right now. Africa right now. From Africa right now. They're coming here. They're coming here. In the name of Jesus, from South America. They're coming here. They're coming here. They're coming here. They're coming here. From Africa. From South America. Angelic forces. Angelic reinforcement. Angelic reinforcement. Angelic reinforcement. Fika hata anda ata ora batarata anda eke manda rasata. For I hear the sound of victory. 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 Made the altar a place for sinners and altars a place for saints to consecrate himself, to come to God, to pour out his heart to God, to mourn before God. Lord, you're hungry. And you don't need my singing. You don't need it. You'll cause the very rocks to cry out if I don't praise you.
God gave me hips and lips for a reason. He did it. He did it. And I work it too. I work my hips and lips. I do.
Here's a problem we have in church, and this is why I love Pastor Paula. Pastor Paula understands men. I have never served under a woman in my life. Y'all looking at me so funny. I've served under strong men my entire life. God connected me with Pastor Paula. Through a tumultuous time, God connected us. But let me tell you why it's so easy for me to serve with her. Because she understands men.
God gave me hips and lips for a reason. He did it. He did it. And I work it too. I work my hips and lips. I do. And I can preach the house down.
I have never served under a woman in my life. And this is why I love Pastor Paula. Pastor Paula understands men.
My executive pastor over at Without Walls has come over just to show his support and to tell New Destiny he loves us. And this is Pastor Michael Williams. And will you welcome him? And God told him to leave his church. He was a senior pastor in Jacksonville, Florida, elder. And God told him to leave and come serve me. And he's done so.
So this woman, Paula White, is an absolute scam artist, adulteress, and she goes against the very teachings of the New Testament. Period. And for Trump to appoint her as his spiritual advisor is laughable and tells you absolutely everything you need to know, but people don't seem to get it. They just don't seem to get it. She's up there preaching in tongues, which are just stupid, silly, made-up words. You can listen to them and realize they're not some. She's not being given some spiritual gift. She's just babbling. And the dude walking around in his shorts, that doesn't even make any sense, but that's their church. And so many people fall for it. Straight up fall for it. And the amount of actors and actresses in the audience, well, this is as old as time immemorial. These people are preaching the nonsensical word to people that really don't understand the Bible, it would appear. And that's, of course, who Trump puts in the front row. The Israeli takeover and infiltration of America is pretty much 90%. They literally just, Indiana just signed a deal with Israel to bring a $15 million investment for tech startups to Indiana, data centers, and more ways of blocking the sun. But these guys have been doing this forever. The Jews run everything you see, hear, and interact with. All the information that you see is coming through a Jewish-owned corporation one way or the other. The fact that on the back of the dollar bill, since the dollar bill's been around, it forms a star of quote-unquote David that spells out the word Mason perfectly. I mean, do you think that's an accident? Why is it every other piece of currency that we have has changed, but the dollar remains the same? Well, that's easy. I was talking to a subscriber the other day, and she's a doctor, and I was explaining that the dollar bill remains constant. The dollar bill remains the same. And the reason it remains the same is because the dollar bill is a talisman, okay? The dollar bill is a talisman that tells you everything you need to know right on the back of it. And it's got all sorts of fun little things incorporated in it, like the Star of Remphram or Israel Star, the word Mason. And it also has a shout out to Skull and Bones with the tiny little owl right up here. You can Google it, but you might be able to see him right there. Every time you use money, you are silent. You're consenting with your silence, because every time you use a dollar, we're all guilty of it. You're helping to make the enormous ritual come to pass. America is an experiment, a Freemasonic experiment, okay? I've spoken about this recently in the last couple of videos. The apotheosis of George Washington is in the Capitol building, etc. An experiment only goes so far. We're at 250 years right now. 250 years right now. And let me tell you a little something that I haven't mentioned before. Not only does Disclosure Day come out June 6th or 7th, but June 14th, there's going to be a fight at the White House. A UFC fight with 4,500 people there. In a real world, that would never happen in a million years, because fighting, the crowd, everybody gets all amped up because it's fighting. The funny thing that nobody's paying attention to is, previously, if you wanted to watch an Ultimate Fighting Championship UFC fight, you had to pay for a pay-per-view. Not anymore, because Larry Ellison's son, David Ellison, bought the UFC. Paramount Plus now owns the UFC. They gave them $7 billion for the company, which is astronomical. But the fun part is everybody on Earth can now watch this UFC fight for free. And everybody will, because we've never seen such a thing. This is going to be an absolute, in a real world, if our government wasn't already the terrorist, this would be a perfect place for a terrorist attack. How do you clear, how do you vet, how do you secure 4,500 people on the property of the White House for an event? Well, they don't care, because I have a really funny feeling that, remember Independence Day? When it came down right over the White House, right after this fight will be 1 week after the movie Disclosure Day comes out. All eyes will see this thing coming down. There's a hot take, and I guarantee you nobody's come up with that one, because I've been thinking about that for over a month, and I've only told a few people face to face. But it's coming. So Larry Ellison's son owns Paramount Plus. Strangely enough, just in the nick of time to allow this all to happen. But the Jews, or those that call themselves Jews but are not, but they're the synagogue of Satan, they own absolutely all the media. I've been talking about this for years. Think about that. Another country owns all the media that we as Americans see. Why is that? How did that happen? Do you see what I'm saying? Because every single solitary politician has been corrupted with money or corrupted with blackmail one way or the other. Trump isn't fighting this war in Iran. I shouldn't even say he's fighting this war. Trump didn't start this war in Iran to cover up the Epstein files. They didn't make believe they shot a spaceship around the moon to cover up the Epstein files. The Epstein files were brought out right now so that they could do exactly what they need to do. You already heard Netanyahu earlier in this video say, yeah, there's a 2-week ceasefire, but we don't care. We'll do whatever we want. And they do. You see what I'm saying? The Epstein files were brought out to show everybody that could possibly stand up and say, stop this fighting. Because we do have a Congress. We do have an actual legal system that could stop the president, but nothing happens. Nothing happens whatsoever at all. The Epstein files were brought out simply to keep those guys in line, because there's still 3 million more. There's still another 3 million Epstein files that haven't been released and probably never will be. I don't know. But they own the media. You don't believe me? Watch this.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish things that simply aren't true without checking facts first.
Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think. And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
These are TV channels from all across the U.S. reading the same script. It's chilling no matter how many times you watch it. See, the idea that America has a free press is an illusion.
The CIA figured out the easiest way to control a country was by headlines.
From Operation Mockingbird, when the CIA recruited American journalists to push out government propaganda, to the Pentagon's relationship with Hollywood, influencing productions like Iron Man, Top Gun, and Transformers to make sure that their scripts follow a pro-America narrative. But there is one moment that fundamentally changed the media landscape in the United States. After intense lobbying from telecom and media corporations, President Bill Clinton signed into law the Telecommunications Act, deregulating media ownership in the country and unleashing the biggest consolidation of media power in American history. Media giants started swallowing up the rest, and the monopolies we see today were born. Thus the term, corporate media.
That deregulation act that Bill Clinton signed into law didn't serve Americans in any way whatsoever at all. And Bill Clinton had no choice because, as you know, Bill Clinton is the number two guy besides Trump on the Epstein list. You see what I mean? So they had massive leverage over him back then. And back when he signed it, people actually still cared. You know what I mean? Bill Clinton played a massive part in completely making a mockery of the seat of the President of the United States by sticking cigars in people and blue dresses and such. And again, that blue dress was prominently displayed at Jeffrey Epstein's house. But I digress.
CBS, NBC, ABC, or the major newspapers in America are owned by big money, and the concentration of that ownership is becoming significantly more severe.
The mainstream media isn't owned by the people. It's owned by rich people, and rich people tell them what to say.
Debates like that are not permitted in American media. Both political parties and their donors have reached consensus on what benefits them, and they actively collude to shut down any conversation about it.
The corporate media is there to further the agenda of the establishment, of the oligarchs, because they own
it. What they're saying is they don't want to relinquish control of what the news is and what information is.
I'm not going to start with who runs these monopolies, companies, or the logos just yet. I want to start with the one thing that they didn't control and how far they were willing to go to change that.
TikTok is a grave national security threat to Americans.
TikTok is just Chinese malware. It's just junk food for our brains.
It is spyware. It is being weaponized.
TikTok is a gun aimed at Americans' heads.
Something felt off. Democrats and Republicans were suddenly unified in an anti-TikTok crusade, drumming up fear to push for a nationwide ban on the app. But when you actually examine the evidence, even the CIA acknowledged that there was no proof the Chinese government accessed the data or was using it in any nefarious way. So what was this really about? Control. One of the biggest social media apps in the world and its algorithm were not being run out of Silicon Valley. They were being run out of a foreign country, and the impact was terrifying.
TikTok is massively popular. It has more than a billion users worldwide and 170 million monthly active users in the US, with fully a third of US adults and a majority of those under 30 using it. Nearly 40% of adults under 30 say they regularly get their news from TikTok, all of which makes it pretty remarkable that it may be on the brink of going away.
Young Americans were getting their news, culture, and political information from a platform that was under no American leverage. And that reality became impossible to ignore as Israel committed genocide in Palestine. In corporate media, one narrative seemed to dominate.
Babies. Their heads cut off. That's what they said.
Spokesman just confirmed. Babies and toddlers were found with their heads decapitated.
And on TikTok and social media, a different reality emerged.
Are you in the IDF?
Yes.
Do you plan on kids in the future, Palestinian kids?
I want to Gaza. I don't care about the kids. I don't care about the civilians. I don't care about them.
So you'll bomb them? You'll bomb the civilians? And
yes, I will Gaza.
America ain't no benevolent country. Israel was a strategic military base for us, a way to control at least two major resources in the region.
I think I just figured out why the US, UK, and France are so adamantly pro-Israel right now.
Bitch, are y'all crazy? What happened to boycotting McDonald's? Y'all forgot? I didn't fucking forget. What's going on?
And that's when the establishment started saying the quiet part out loud.
We need to talk about TikTok. TikTok, if you will, it is the 24/7 news channel of so many of our young people amplifying and intensifying the anti-Semitism and the anti-Zionism with no repercussions.
Smart, well-educated young people from our own country, from around the world, where were they getting their information? They were getting their information from social media, particularly TikTok. That's a serious problem. It's a serious problem for democracy, whether it's Israel or the United States, and it's a serious problem for our young people.
TikTok or other entities of that nature, if you look at the postings on TikTok and the number of mentions of Palestinians relative to other social media sites, it's overwhelmingly so among TikTok broadcast. So I'd note that's of real interest, and the president will get the chance to make action in that regard.
So TikTok was given an ultimatum: ban or sell.
You and the president will be signing the deal, the official deal, later this week at some point. Under the terms of this deal, TikTok will be owned by a majority of American investors and controlled by a board of directors with extensive national security and cybersecurity credentials. In partnership with the U.S. government, Oracle will serve as TikTok's trusted security provider. And the algorithm, I know this is a question many of you have had, will be secured, retrained, and operated in the United States.
And someone particular was quite enthusiastic about the sale. Check this out.
Fight with the weapons that apply to the battlefields in which we're engaged. And the most important ones are in social media. And the most important purchase that is going on right now is TikTok, number one.
The anti-TikTok crusade worked. TikTok was brought to heel. It was absorbed into a system of corporate profit, institutional leverage, and narrative discipline. They now own the algorithm. This brings us to the buyer of TikTok and the first of the big four who monopolize modern media and tech, Larry Ellison. Episodes like this are possible because of our Patreon supporters. Doing this work takes time, resources, and editorial independence, and we're only able to do that thanks to our community. So if you believe in what we're doing and want to be part of this with us, consider joining our Patreon. It's how we keep this going. Paramount Skydance Corporation is owned by Larry Ellison and his son David. It is a media empire. They include CBS, all its affiliates and their locally owned stations, MTV, VH1, BET, Comedy Central, Nickelodeon, Paramount Pictures, Showtime, Paramount Plus, and so much more. From major news broadcasters and programs like 60 Minutes and Face the Nation, to movie franchises like Top Gun, Mission Impossible, Transformers, Terminator, and Star Trek. The Ellisons are now in a bidding war against Netflix for one of the other big four, Warner Brothers. If they acquire them, they will become one of the biggest media conglomerates in the world. That's some scary stuff. So who is Larry Ellison? He is a centibillionaire, and at one point, he was the richest man on Earth. He founded Oracle, that had its origins through his work with the CIA. Oracle now works across the US government, with US intelligence agencies, national security agencies, and the Pentagon. Beyond that, he's a big donor in American politics. He's funded Democrats and Republicans and is a big supporter of President Donald Trump.
But it doesn't stop there. Larry Ellison is also the biggest private donor to the Israeli military.
The renewal of the Jewish state is something that I think touches all of us. For 2,000 years, we were a stateless people. And now we have a country of our own, defended by all the brave men and women of the IDF.
He is a personal friend of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Ellison offered Netanyahu a board seat at Oracle in 2021 and had the Prime Minister and his family vacation on Ellison's private island in Hawaii. So yes, the man at the center of the TikTok deal sits atop a rapidly expanding media empire and is positioning himself to become the most powerful media mogul in the world. And he's already begun mobilizing his media assets to further his political agenda, like appointing the infamous Barry Weiss as the editor-in-chief of CBS. This is how media ownership works in manufacturing consent. It's how wealth, infrastructure, political access, and media power converge in a single individual. And Larry Ellison is only one part of the system. To understand how deep this consolidation goes, we need to look at the rest of the Big Four. Disney is one of the most iconic brands in the world. It's where imagination comes alive. A whole new world. Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase. I even grew up watching Disney movies in Palestine. But don't let that warm, fuzzy brand fool you. Disney controls one of the largest media ecosystems on Earth. It is a cold-cut business, with a revenue of over $94 billion in 2025. Disney owns ABC News, ESPN, Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, FX, National Geographic, Hulu, 20th Century Studios, Searchlight Pictures, Disney Plus, and dozens of international networks spanning news, sports, film, television, and streaming worldwide. But who owns Disney? Well, it's a publicly traded company. Three largest shareholders are Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street. Disney is primarily owned by institutional capital that also happens to invest in arms and defense companies closely aligned to the US military. Also invest in Israeli weapons and military companies like Elbit Systems and Rada Electronic Industries. Both have been found complicit in Israeli crimes against Palestinians. These institutional investors also invest in the other Big Four and wield tremendous influence on them. The system is incentivized to maximize profit by avoiding controversy that could scare the markets, maintain political and regulatory stability, and protect relationships with advertisers and governments. So Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street don't control Disney's content directly. They control incentives, and incentives shapes behavior. And to make profit, you have to toe the line. That's how corporate media works.
And so, we are all connected in the great circle of life.
But it doesn't end here for Disney. Bob Iger has been the longtime CEO and face of the company. He's always been very careful to navigate politics that might affect profit, and has even registered as an independent. But for some reason, that didn't matter when he directed Disney to donate $2 million to Israel after October 7th. So apparently that was acceptable and didn't cross the corporate media line. Comcast is the largest media and telecom company in America. It owns NBC, MSNBC, CNBC, Universal Pictures, Peacock, Telemundo, Sky News, and one of the largest sports and entertainment portfolios in the world. Similar to Disney, the majority of shares are held by the same institutional investors. The company is run by Brian Roberts, the son of the founder, Ralph Roberts. And Brian also donated $2 million to Israel after October 7th. Comcast is a great example of what happens when media steps outside of approved narratives. Over time, newsrooms learn which stories create problems
and which don't.
Don't run, Hillary. Don't run. But afterwards, the Clinton people called and complained to the MSNBC top brass and threatened not to provide any access during the upcoming campaign.
I was called in by my boss, who said, that was fine, but anything else that you do on Hillary Clinton needs to be submitted to the president of the network.
Comcast owns some of the largest news outlets in America, including MSNBC, which is considered to be quite liberal. In the last 2 years, both Mehdi Hassan and Ayman Muhyiddin lost their highly popular flagship shows on MSNBC. The cancellations were explained as schedule changes, programming realignment, and a shift towards panel-based formats. But in reality, Mehdi and Ayman were the leading anchors on US primetime TV that were bringing on Palestinian voices during the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
Tuesday, Israel's Channel 12 released a leaked surveillance video that appeared to show Israeli soldiers allegedly sexually assaulting a Palestinian prisoner at a detention camp outside of Gaza.
Details an Israeli defense company using actual footage of their drones striking in Gaza in their promotional video. A strike that may have, as global arms trade expert Andrew Feinstein told him, turned out to have killed civilians, including kids.
Palestine is the red line. It's enough to get your show canceled because it's not part of the establishment's approved narrative. We've seen this happen time and time and time again in American media. Why? Because MSNBC is not an independent media outlet. It's part of a big corporate conglomerate. It's liberalism. It's just a facade to give the viewer an illusion of choice. And at the end of the day, it's just part of the model for manufacturing consent.
To eliminate confusion, all of this has nothing to do with liberal or conservative bias. According to the propaganda model, both liberal and conservative wings of the media, whatever those terms are supposed to mean, fall within the same framework of assumptions. In fact, if the system functions well, it ought to have a liberal bias, or at least appear to, because if it appears to have a liberal bias, that will serve to bound thought even more effectively. In other words, if the press is indeed adversarial and liberal and all these bad things, then how can I go beyond it? They're already so extreme in their opposition to power that to go beyond it would be to take off from the planet. So therefore, it must be that the presuppositions that are accepted in the liberal media are sacrosanct, can't go beyond them.
Comcast is a massive corporation with government contracts, regulatory exposure, and advertiser dependence. Dissenting voices means risk and liability. This is the system. It's not just about MSNBC or Comcast, but all of corporate media. The last of the big four is no little guy. Warner Brothers Discovery is massive. They own CNN, HBO, Warner Brothers Pictures, DC, Rocksteady Studios, Discovery, TNT, TBS, Cartoon Network, The Travel Channel, and Max, spanning global news, premium television, film, sports, and streaming. And this is their CEO.
How lucky we are to have Israel and what it took, and the strength of the Haganah and the Irgun and the heart of the Israeli people to fight for a free democracy. And, you know, what that means and what that means to all of us as Jews, that Israel continue to prosper for my children, for my grandchildren, but also as a kind of a shining light of democracy.
Warner Brothers and its flagship asset, CNN, are a great example of corporate media's connection to the establishment, especially the intelligence, foreign policy, and warmongering elite.
A moment to finish off the Iranian nuclear weapons program, which I think we have the capacity to do.
CNN presents itself as independent, authoritative, and objective. But like most corporate newsrooms, it doesn't primarily rely on independent investigation. It relies on sources, and that is important to understand. Most of CNN's breaking news comes from a very familiar set of institutions. The White House, the Pentagon, the State Department, intelligence officials, police departments, and corporate spokespeople. These sources are always available, always quotable, and always framed as credible. The access is the currency. Similarly, During Israel's genocide in Gaza, CNN relied on its access to the Israeli military and government to shape the narrative.
We have some really disturbing new information out of Israel. The Israeli Prime Minister's spokesman just confirmed babies and toddlers were found with their heads decapitated.
All of which came from the very top. When your news operation depends on powerful institutions for a steady flow of information, the perspective of those institutions becomes the default reality. Dissent with the approved narrative cuts off access to the establishment. And that is how consent is manufactured in favor of the establishment.
You having a global media enterprise, I mean, have you shaped that agenda at all in terms of perceptions of the war, in terms of how the war is viewed?
Well, we basically supported Peppers, and I would say supported the Bush policy
right.
in the Middle East.
While not part of the Big Four, the Murdochs deserve a honorable mention. With their vast media empire spanning the US, UK, and Australia, the Murdochs are notorious for their scandals, their biased news coverage, and the use of their media empire to further their political agenda.
The Murdochs made those decisions, but it's just a fact that they did do that, and they overruled their people on questions of war.
They are the quintessential example of manufacturing consent during times of war, like the war on Iraq, the genocide in Gaza, and the bombing of Iran. Why? Because it's good for business.
Maybe your viewers don't fully understand or appreciate how profitable it is for these networks during war. So if you look at the numbers from like Q1 of 2002, before we went into Iraq, the numbers for revenue for Fox in that following quarter, when the war started in March, the numbers went up 150%.
No way.
150%. So war is incredibly profitable. I mean, CNN was built on it, right? I mean, CNN's...
Of course, it literally started or was brought to public attention during the war that your brother served in 1990. Yeah.
There's one more thing that connects the Big Four that we haven't discussed, and it's ideology. A shared worldview that defines what sounds reasonable and what sounds extreme. During the Cold War, it was anti-communism. Today, it's national security, terrorism, and, as we saw glaringly across this video, it's Zionism. Whether it's institutional investors or the four leading figures of the Big Four plus Murdoch, they are all openly Zionist and have given some form of support to Israel and have mobilized their media assets in that direction. As we've proved, this is just a fact. Zionism is a political ideology that is embedded within the American propaganda model and its financial incentives. The big tech companies also operate across the same landscape of U.S. leverage, control, propaganda, and financial incentives.
Tech titans that control nearly all aspects of our digital lives in some way or another. And it might look like a lot of pomp and circumstance, but the power dynamics at play here are going to be some of the most consequential of our time, even if we don't see them on camera.
It is no coincidence that many of these platforms also silenced Palestinians and others who spoke up during the genocide in Gaza.
So, I don't like to make videos this long because usually I don't have time to. As you can see, in the making of this video, I've already showered and changed clothes because it takes this long to do so. But this might be my mea culpa. This might be my final video. So, if it is, so be it. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. Our government has been infiltrated and our government has been completely taken over. We have a Zionist president running the show right now, and all our checks and balances are now faulty because they're all compromised or Zionist themselves. Do you see what I'm saying? These people that claim they are Jews but are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan, as it says in the book of Revelation, not once but twice, they have a goal, and that goal requires their own country as well as our own country to go down in absolute flames. And the fact that every single person involved is tied to Israel directly, not even a little, you know, you have to look around, it's directly. We've got two, between OpenAI and Palantir, we have two sodomites running the show. Elon Musk, the puppet that's put up there as, I have $890 billion. From what? From what? From what? SpaceX, but then NASA just went to the moon. You know what I mean? They didn't even go, Elon went to the moon. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just complete and utter nonsense. But these people own everything. And again, Indiana just made a deal to put up data centers and to start do startups for Israeli interest in our country. In our country, the most dangerous country on earth, because these people have dirt on absolutely everybody. And even our own Central Intelligence Agency fears the Mossad. Or their secret tech group, Unit 8200, which is making its way to the home, the heartland of America. You know what I'm saying? These guys have carte blanche, open door, do whatever you want, and they absolutely hate us. They absolutely hate us. They have already shown that they will kill, they will rape, they will propagandize absolutely anything, and they can do, I mean, they literally just committed a mass genocide to an entire race of people who actually have DNA that goes back to the apple of God's eye. I can't prove that, you can't prove that, but I also can't disprove it. But it makes sense. Who's being attacked and wiped out? Do you see what I'm saying? They got away with it completely. They dragged us into a war with Iran that's a complete setup for the Great Reset, the New World Order, or Agenda 2030, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter. But every single week that goes by, things are going to keep going. They're going to keep going and going. But I believe at the end of April, beginning of May, it's going to get really, really bad. So be ready for that. So let me leave you with this.
Y'all want to hear something crazy? You know that large data center that Meta is building in Louisiana? Well, they want Entergy to build 10 gas power plants just to supply the electricity for that damn data center. I'm not shitting y'all. They're going to provide enough electricity to power 7 million houses. But they need it for that damn power plant. Entergy has already signed a contract with Energy Transfer for them to supply them a pipeline of natural gas. 36-inch pipeline. They're going to provide them 1 billion cubic feet a day of natural gas just to power the power plants so they can provide electricity for that damn data center. Now, Entergy says it's not going to raise the prices for none of their customers because Meta's going to pay for it. Damn good thing, huh? But they're also building transmission lines to add to the grid so any excess electricity that they make can help go to supply for the customers. I guess that's a good thing too, huh? That artificial intelligence must be fucking important.
Woo! The frightening scenario of a comprehensive cyber attack, which would bring to a complete halt to the power supply, transportation, hospital services, our society as a whole.
In the next year, we will see significant threats we have to mitigate from cyber.
The COVID-19 crisis would be seen in this respect as a small disturbance in comparison to a major cyber attack. To use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity to reflect on the lessons the cybersecurity community can draw and improve our preparedness for a potential cyber pandemic.
There could well be a world-shaking cyber attack this year that would get people's attention. It sounds like you agree with that.
I think that's totally possible.
So once again, in a real world, you know, if we weren't living in this literal video game, everything wouldn't be going to a digital dollar and social credit score, and everything is digital, 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 if they still can't stop a simple cyber attack. You know what I'm saying? They are the cyber attack. Everything is baked into the system. I've been, since the day I started on YouTube, I've been talking about the yearly report by the Department of Homeland Security, where they're warning us that our electrical grid is it's ready to go any minute. It's easily taken down. It's old. It's overpowered. So quickly, let's add on another 4,300 data centers to suck power from every. Do you understand what they're building? They're building a system that you're not in anymore. That's the whole. That's the coup d'etat. None of this makes sense unless there's no people in the United States. The United States is just going to be a wasteland, which is why they've never built any buildings of importance. There's nothing historical here. You know what I mean? We live in a disposable society, and that's exactly what they're going to do to us. A few of us can see. A few of us are awake, but sadly, not nearly enough. But I'll tell you what. If this is the last video I ever make, I'm good with that, man. Remember I said that. And I'll leave you with this.
Judaism itself was created as a substitute for Judaism, a replacement for Judaism, and a way to negate Judaism.
Yeah, so that takes us to our first question. What is a Jew?
Zionists are unable to answer because they negated the real definition. When I say the real definition, I mean the only intellectually consistent one. Being a Jew, in the most accurate way to describe it, is a job description given by God. God said, you are deputized into this religion. You are obligated to fulfill these commandments, whether you do them or not. The obligation, the job description, defines you as a Jew. Now, the Zionists didn't want this definition of Jew. The Zionist plan was to change, to end anti-Semitism by changing Semitism, as far as Jews are concerned, by eliminating that. The problem with the original plan, assimilation, is that it didn't work. In the late 1800s, there were pogroms, primarily in Russia, which showed the Zionists, or the assimilated Jews, actually, that assimilated Jews are still Jews, and they're still hated. But now that's where the identity crisis comes in. The subtitle of my book is Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft. The Zionists didn't understand this. They were thinking, why do people hate us if we're just like the Gentiles? We're just regular Russians. Why do they look at us as Jews? That's a very good question. I once asked an anti-Semite, a real famous anti-Semite, how do you decide who's a Jew? He says, well, whoever identifies as a Jew is Jewish. The Zionists had said to themselves, hey, We don't want to be Jews, but the Gentiles won't let us be Gentiles. So what are we? That was the identity crisis. And many scholars have used that phrase in various contexts. It was an identity crisis. So they came up with what I call identity theft. We're going to change the definition of Jew. Nationalism was just starting in those days. This was the 1800s. It was the Balkan people and others. Nation states started being formed in those days. And they said, hey, nationalism worked for so many people, let it work for the Jews as well. So we're going to change the definition of Jew to a nationality. Until the Zionists, nobody looked at the Jews as a nationality. The plan was to change the definition of a Jew to a nationality. And the idea was that once the Jews change their definition, the way they look at themselves, the world will change the way they look at the Jews as well. The Jews will also, by changing the way they look at themselves, change their personalities, change their ideology, change the way they act, the way they behave, and change their aspirations and their values. Whereas previously, Jews were, as the Bible describes it, Mamleches Kehanim v'Goy Kodosh, which means a people who are enjoined by God to fulfill this religion. And the Jews themselves, about 1,000 years ago, were the ones that suggested they live in ghettos. They wanted to be separate, socially and culturally separate from the rest of society, loyal to the countries that they live, absolutely, but culturally and socially separate, because we have our own laws, we have our own lifestyle, and they were. There were assimilated Jews that didn't like that, and when they had a chance to break out of the ghetto, they did, thinking, as I mentioned, that assimilation is going to end anti-Semitism and they're going to be like everybody else. When they saw that didn't work, then they tried nationalism. Nationalism is another name for Zionism, Jewish nationalism. That's all Zionism is. But the thing to know about Zionism is that whereas the Kurds, for example, look at themselves as a nationality and they're trying to find a state, right? The Jews never did. The Zionists had to convince the Jews that you are not what you think you are. You are not the Mamleches Kehanim v'Goy Kodosh. You are not a people who are enjoined by God to fulfill this religion, these religious laws. You are a nation. You need a language. You need a flag. You need a country. Because Jews didn't share a language for 2,000 years. More than for thousands of years, we hadn't spoken Hebrew. In biblical times, they did. But that wasn't the national language of the Jewish people, meaning that's not what united us into being a people. The only thing that united us into being a people is our Torah, our faith. It was so well known that this quote that we are only a people because of our faith, it's over 1,000 years old, and it was like the meme of Jewish identity. Even Theodor Herzl mentions it in his diary. Everybody knew that. The Zionists had to change that. And because Jews had no flag, they had no common language, culture, or land, the Zionists had to provide them with it. The Zionists set out to synthesize a new nationality. But instead of creating a new nationality out of nothing, Herzl stand and we'll call
like
ourselves the
Canaanism that you refer to.
The Canaanim, yes. Yeah. So, yes, very good. There was this small group of kind of like Zionists called the Canaanim that decided to create a new nation. The Canaan is named after the people who were occupying, who were living in the Holy Land before Joshua came in there and conquered it. And they decided, okay, we're gonna make a new nationality. We're the Canaanim. It didn't never hit it off, because why would anybody identify with that? So the Zionists, Theodor Herzl mostly, had this brilliant idea. You know, if you want to take somebody's, if you want to change your identity, a witness protection program or something, you can get the government to give you a whole new identity, and that'll work. But there's a lot of resources and time and effort spent to create such. There's another way to do it that's easier. Kill somebody that's around your age, steal his papers, steal his birth certificate, steal his license, steal his identity, and you're him. That's what the Zionists did to the Jews collectively. We're going to erase Jewish identity. We're going to take their history, change it a bit. We're going to take their identity. We're going to take their self-image. We're going to take Jewishness, and we're going to make it into Zionism. We're going to get the Jews a flag. There was a Zionist flag before there was a state of Israel. We're going to get the Jews a language. There was a Zionist language. Modern Hebrew was created by the Zionists before there was a state of Israel, because they wanted to supply the Jews with national characteristics, national symptoms, national equipment. They redid history, redid ideology, and just started creating cultural centers and schools and an entirely new, it was a social engineering project. But one thing they were unable to steal, and that's the definition of a Jew. Considering what the definition of a Jew is, it depends on Torah law. Whoever the Torah says is obligated in the commandments is a Jew. So now, how are the Zionists going to define a Jew? Judaism, what value is the Holy Land? The Holy Land is the Holy Land. That's what it is to us, a holy land. It's not a national homeland. It's a wonderful place, and the borders of the Holy Land are not exactly the borders of Israel. The southern town Eilat is not part of our Holy Land, and southern Lebanon, somewhere south of Beirut, is the Holy Land. They couldn't even decide whether they wanted the Holy Land or somewhere else. You know, they had the Uganda plan, they had other things. And Theodor Herzl, who was the masterminds behind Zionism, he said, no, listen, guys, we want the Holy Land because, remember, this is like identity theft. He didn't use these words. I'm paraphrasing, of course. He said, for marketing purposes, we need to get the Jews to identify with our movement. So we're going to use Jewish symbols, phrases that are familiar, concepts that are precious, and we're just going to twist them a bit. The problem is you cannot have a Jewish country, Jewish state, the way they define a Jewish state, and also be a democracy. And if they want to retain it as a Jewish state, that's the cause of the problem. So the problem is that Israel calls itself the Jewish state. Israel is the only country in the world that claims that it is not the country of its citizens, it's the country of the Jews. This is the point that causes the problem. There is no country in the world that claims that it's the country of people who are not its citizens, never were its citizens, don't claim to be its citizens, don't plan on being its citizens. That means two things. Thing number one, if you live in Israel and you're not Jewish, although you may have civil rights to vote and things like that, Israel is not your country, meaning you do not have national self-determination rights in Israel. However, if you're somebody like me, who lives outside of Israel, is not Israeli, I don't have a right to vote, I have no civil rights in Israel, Israel is my country. Netanyahu claims he's my prime minister. Israel claims to be my state. Israel is the only country like this, nowhere else. Jews should identify as Israelis, but Israel's the only such country, and that's the cause of the problem, you see? It's all this identity theft. It's a new thing, about 20 years old maybe, identity Zionism. Google it.
I'd like to know what your position is on what the scripture actually says a Jewish person's connection or relationship has to be with that land.
According to Judaism, the land is holy. It was the same Jerusalem and the same Holy Land when the Romans had it, when the Mamluks had it, when the British had it. The only thing that will affect its holiness is the behavior of people in the land. If people behave in a godlike manner, the land itself becomes holier. If people behave against God, then the land itself becomes less holy. It's a spiritually sensitive land. And Jews were there when we had King David, when we had prophets, when we had a much higher level of fulfillment of Judaism than we do today. And then came the idol worshipers. And God said, as it says in the Bible, if you worship idols, God is going to kick you out of the land. And in fact, Jews say that passage three times a day in our prayers. And God did that. And we went back once and we got kicked out again. It was because of our sins. Yes, the Romans were the rod of God's wrath at the 2,000 years ago, but this is our belief. My argument isn't with somebody that says, okay, we don't believe that. But my answer to him, you don't believe that, then why do you need the Holy, what is the Holy Land anyway? Then what's a Jew? King David, again, in the Bible, Ruth was a Moabite. She converted. Her descendant is King David. We have there's no problem with converts. Convert if you want. It's not a race. It's not a ethnicity. It's a relationship with God. It's a being deputized into God's work. That's all being Jewish is. And This is precisely why they insist on drafting all the ultra-Orthodox Jews. And now you know why we refuse to go. They will refuse to serve their country. Oh, no. The purpose of Israel's army is not merely to be a military. The purpose of Israel's army is to be a melting pot. It's a church of Zionism. You know that they teach about Judaism and Jewish identity in the army? It's ridiculous. The army is their church of Zionism. In the Talmud, there are sections that discuss not technical legal Jewish law, but morals and religion and theology. It's called Agadah. In modern Hebrew, that word means a fairy tale. You see what they did? They changed.
This is Maven Smart System. Palantir's software as a service product that we are deploying across the entire department. As you can see, it's not just one data feed, it's multiple. And instead of having 8 or 9 systems for those decision makers to look at every single day in order for them to make decisions, you then fuse it into a single visualization tool. The single visualization tool allows you to select, deselect different types of data, look at different approaches to data, but more importantly, action from the same system that you're trying to develop your workflows around. Once you have a detection that you want to actually move and actually move into a targeting workflow, for example, this is what we do. Left click, right click, left click, magically, it becomes a detection. That detection then gets moved into a workflow. This is standard digitized workflow, but I want to walk you through it quickly. You have different types of targets that are identified on the left there. Every single column produces a different type of decision-making process. Once you have that decision and you're trying to actually action that process, we now move into COA generation, course of action generation, where we are automatically, via a number of factors, trying to identify what the best asset to prosecute a target looks like. Once we've got the different approaches and we select one, we then can move directly into how do we action that target. So we've gone from identifying the target to now coming up with a course of action to now actioning that target, all from one system. This is revolutionary. We were having this done in about 8 or 9 systems where humans were literally moving detections left and right in order to get to our desired end state, in this case, actually closing a kill chain.